This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You want to get the most for your money. That's why more Mazda buyers choose Ramsey Mazda. Lease a new 2025 Mazda CX-50 all-wheel drive, only $249 a month. Or buy and get 0.9% APR financing for 36 months. Start shopping now at RamseyMazda.com. Choose wisely. Choose Ramsey Mazda.
Call 833-853-2970 for details. Excludes tax, title, and registration. Zero security deposit. VIN SN316458. MSRP 32295 and 33125.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Former appellate court judge Eileen O'Neill Burke was sworn in as Cook County State's attorney last December, so she's been in office for about 100 days. That's traditionally a milestone for checking up on how things are going for someone in elective office. Well, this weekend, we're going to do just that. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. Democrat Eileen O'Neill Burke won a convincing victory over Republican opponent and former Alderman Bob Fioretti last year. The campaign largely revolved around who would be tougher on crime, though both support things like restorative justice and the like. So what does Cook County justice look like under state's attorney Eileen Burke? Well, we're going to ask her. We are conducting this talk via Zoom conferencing. And state's attorney Burke, welcome back.
Thank you, Craig. I'm glad to be back.
Well, let's talk about what's different in that office right now. You made some changes from your predecessor Kim Fox's operations pretty much from day one, right?
Yeah, we implemented several new policies on the first day. One, the most important one in my mind, is our gun policy and how we are going to approach addressing the gun violence epidemic that's plaguing this city. So it was apparent during the campaign when we would see these numbers of people being shot over a weekend that mass shootings were starting to happen on a regular basis. It used to be a very rare event, and where only supervisors from the police departments and supervisors from the state's attorney's office would get involved. It became so routine that people started getting immune to the gun violence numbers. They started, you know, if you heard 30, 40 people were shot over the weekend, it wasn't shocking anyone anymore. And the reason why we saw this proliferation of gun violence is because of the use of not just assault weapons like an AK-47 or an AR-15, but we would see the use of switches. So when you put a switch on a handgun, it converts it into an automatic weapon. When you equip it with an extended magazine, that handgun can now fire off 30 rounds in 1 second. But when you do that to a handgun, it makes it very difficult to control. It just sprays bullets. So that's why we're continuously seeing people who have nothing to do with the dispute getting swept up in gunfire. People are being shot in their homes, shot in a car, based on random gun violence happening that has nothing to do with them. So it's because of these guns. So the law treats these guns very differently. Under the assault weapons ban, it has elevated the class of offense, not just for assault weapons, but for guns that have the switch in the extended magazine. It elevates the class of offense and it extends the term of sentence. So on day one, my priority was guns. We are going after the guns. So we are asking for detention each and every time someone is found with one of these weapons. We are not pleading these cases down. We are seeking jail time on these offenses. We can change how cool it is to carry these guns by enforcing the law. There needs to be a serious consequence to be carrying a weapon that can take out dozens of people in seconds. We need to make sure that people understand how seriously we treat these offenses.
And dealing with the guns that have been converted into being automatic is one thing. Does that also help differentiate between guns that some people feel they need to carry despite the laws as protection for themselves?
So let's talk about that, because we've seen a big pool of people who have handguns since the pandemic. So, and I think that makes sense. People were afraid during the pandemic, so a lot of people got handguns. At the same time, the department that was in charge of doing fire owners identification cards shrunk from 5 people to 2 people. So the waiting period to get, they're called a FOID card, the waiting period to get a FOID card went from 6 months to about 2.5 years. So now we have a large pool of people who are otherwise law-abiding, who are in violation of it's the lowest level felony offense you can have. It's a class 4 felony. So what we are doing to address that population, and it's not just that I feel like we should treat these cases differently, the law treats them differently. If you have a handgun without a fire owner's identification card, that's a regulation issue. That's why it's a less serious felony. Whereas if you're carrying an assault weapon or a gun with a switch, that is a much more serious felony under the law. So what we're trying to do with people who do not have a FOID card or a concealed carry license is we have introduced legislation in Springfield. And the reason why we had to do it is this. Once you're charged, it's called unlawful use of a weapon. Once you're charged with that class 4 felony, you can no longer get a FOID card. You're prohibited from it. So what we want to do with this legislation is if somebody is otherwise qualified for a FOID card, we put them into a program where we walk them through how to get a FOID card. At the end of when they're ready to get the FOID card, we dismiss the felony charge against them and they are now in compliance with the law. So we've brought people into compliance and they will no longer be continuously, because the problem that caused them to get a handgun isn't solved. It's they still might, you know, feel afraid or they still might feel the need to carry a weapon. We need to solve the problem. And the problem is they're not regulated. So now we're going to bring them into regulation.
And that is, though, with state legislation, what's the status of that legislation at this point?
So Senator L.G. Sims is our sponsor in the Senate, and Justin Slaughter is our sponsor in the House. So we are feeling pretty confident. It just makes sense. It's logical. And I think whenever you can explain something that is logically going to address a problem, I'm hopeful that people will see the utility of this.
One other change that you've made in the office, one that we knew was coming, you lowered the threshold for prosecutions of retail theft.
Oh, Craig, I'm going to jump on you on this one. I didn't do anything. The law said that the statute on retail theft is if the value of the goods is $300 or above. So what had happened is in the last administration, they had made a policy that they would not prosecute retail theft if the value of the goods was less than $1,000. So I took an oath as a judge. I took a same oath as state's attorney that I will uphold the law. The law says $300 or above. If there's an appetite to change the law, the correct way to do that is go to Springfield and change the law, and I will uphold that law. But the law says $300 or above. There's a different portion of the statute, which also says if you have a previous conviction for retail theft, which means you've pretty much gone through a couple other diversionary programs, you've gotten supervision, and now you're at a conviction. So it means that you're probably at least at three or four retail thefts, court-involved retail thefts. So if you have a prior conviction, then the value of the goods does not have to be $300. It could be $20. So the prior administration had a policy that you had to have 10 prior convictions before that provision of the retail theft statute would kick in. We are adhering to the law again. The law is one prior conviction, and you qualify as a felony in retail theft. So.
Has that affected the number of cases that you're seeing?
The one statistic I've seen is that we have had 154% increase in prosecution of retail theft. But that's a false number because we were at zero. And so 154% is just a normal amount of retail theft. And we're handling it just fine. My state's attorneys have really been so tremendous and so inspiring about how dedicated they are to the mission of this office.
When you're talking about with the guns, and when we talked about the differences, and it's really good to know about that. Are there any other things that the state's attorney's office is in a position to do when it comes to gun violence, whether that's being in cooperation with police or the feds or whatever? Is there anything else going on that we should know about?
There's a lot of significant resources that we've thrown at this problem. We have a gun crime strategy unit, and we started doing a tour of everybody and anybody who has anything to do with gun violence. We have been at the table talking to them. So one of the first things we did was we went to the Chicago Gun Intelligence Center, which is called CGIC. That's the other thing I found, there is a lot of acronyms. But CGIC is a space where all law enforcement agencies come together with the U.S. attorney and the state's attorney. So when we went on a tour, we saw there was an office that said Cook County State's Attorney, but we had never put anybody there. So CGIC has the ATF, the FBI, any other federal and CPD is there, law enforcement agency, and they have the ability to take a shell casing and they put it through a machine called an IBIN machine, and the machine can tell them where else that gun has been utilized. So we might have somebody on just a possession, a class two possession of an assault weapon. And by utilizing the resources that are in CGIC, we could find that that same gun has been used in 20 different crimes all around the city. Well, that puts us in a significantly different position when we go in and ask for detention.
I want to talk a little bit about the Safety Act. Well, we'll probably end up talking a lot about the Safety Act, but one of the things that it does is it keeps people who might be charged with lesser crimes from being locked up just because they couldn't afford, even relatively low bail.
I agree with it.
And I know that, and the question is, knowing that it means there's more of a workload now for state's attorneys having to prove, how is that working out in terms of the kind of work that has to be done to prepare for the hearings when you are going to go in and ask for someone to be held behind bars pending trial?
So, and cut me off because I can go way into the weeds on this, Craig. So let's start with the Safety Act. And the Safety Act, why I think it is a valuable, vital piece of legislation. So the Safety Act says we're not going to look at money bond anymore, that it's not going to be, how much can you post for bond? And that's a significant change. That is, we're one of the first jurisdictions to try to do this. So now our criterion is, are you a danger to the public or are you not? And if you're not a danger to the public, there is no reason for you to be incarcerated before you're found guilty. But at the same time, if you're somebody like a Jeffrey Epstein, where you could buy your way out of jail if you wanted to, based on whatever bond they set, well, that's also not effective in pretrial detaining. So the safety act says we're not going to look at that. All we're going to look at is, are you a danger to the public or are you not? So we put out on day one very specific cases that we will ask for detention on. Any forcible felony, meaning like any.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but... Scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule. And there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Anytime, armed robbery, a carjacking, you rob somebody with a knife or a weapon, or attempt murder, any of the serious felonies, anything that somebody would... Logically, you would say, yeah, they present a danger to the public. Sexual assault, those types of crimes, we are asking for detention on. So you are correct. Under the Safety Act, we then have to go to a hearing. So we knew that there were significant issues in detention court right away. So what we did within the first week is we embedded two of our investigators into first appearance court so that we could have a very full picture of a defendant before we went to that hearing. So I will give you an example of what some of the hindrances were to that. We've been talking to a lot of the judges and finding out from their perspective, what do they need from us? What are we lacking? Where do we need, to buff it up? And so one of them told us a story about she was in first appearance court and a defendant, the petition to detain was, it said like he violated an order of protection by leaving a basket of gifts for his children on his ex-wife's doorstep. And so the judge looks at that allegation in the petition to detain, and she was like, yeah, state, why are you asking for a petition to detain on this? And it was a brand spanking new state's attorney in there, and she was like, humina, humina, I'm not sure, I don't know. So luckily, this judge had come out of civil court and had brought her court clerk with her. And so she knew to how to backdoor into the divorce file. So they went into the divorce file and they pulled out the original order of protection. The order of protection was based on the fact that the defendant had taken the children, absconded with them to Indiana, had locked himself in a hotel room and threatened to kill himself and the children in the hotel room. A SWAT team had to surround the hotel in order to get the completely traumatized children out of there. So my point is, divorce files are sealed. State's attorney's office didn't have any access to that. We didn't have any access to any kind of child protection file. If someone has gotten an order of protection and it was not served by the sheriff's office, that file was sealed. We couldn't see that. So our systems were not talking to each other. And that's a significant problem. So we've been doing workarounds, but we are committed to making sure that each and every stakeholder can access our system so that we can work together, so that we can get the fullest picture possible when we go in front of a judge and ask for detention.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore. My guest is Cook County State's Attorney Eileen O'Neill Burke. Continue along those lines. Let's talk about, I was going to say manpower, but I'm trying to train myself to just say staffing since it's more, it's not just men. So,
Right. Wow. We don't want to be sexist here, Craig. We don't want to
absolutely
get
not.
canceled.
How about the staffing? Because there was already a staffing shortage at the state's attorney's office for various reasons. What's the situation like now? I know you were going to be doing and are going to be doing more recruiting, more training. How are things going on that front?
So, a couple different things. So, like this is we have a lot of irons in the fire on this. And a third of our office has been in the state's attorneys 3 years or less. So that means a significant portion of our state's attorneys are very new attorneys. So, and we were looking at places along the trajectory of somebody's career. Where are our pain points? Where are we losing people the most? And how can we fix that? So we're working diligently every single day on figuring out, like, how do we make this easier? So a big part of what we did is we were told by the prior administration to expect a 50% acceptance rate on offers for third-year law students. So as soon as we came in December, they had previously made the offers in March and April. Well, if somebody is a third-year law student and you haven't heard by March or April, you're taking another job somewhere else. So we knew as soon as we came in December, we had to get our offers out to third-year law students. So we got our offers out within the first 2 weeks. And I got to tell you, so we made 30 offers, 29 out of 30 accepted, which is significant. So we just by making that one small tweak of when the offers went out, we made a big difference. We're also bringing a lot of people back that had left the office previously because they believe in what we're trying to do, that we are committed to building the best prosecutor's office in the entire nation. And people want to be part of that. We're also getting a lot of applications from federal agencies that, you know, are undergoing seismic change. And we're here to fill that gap of where federal agencies may not be pursuing cases. So to that end, can I go on to my next subject? Because this one's important
Please.
to me. So we created different bureaus. So there's five bureaus. It's an enormous office. So if there's 750 attorneys. We have about 1,350 staff. We have 110 investigators, which makes us larger than most police districts in the state. So it's an enormous staff. And what we want to do is utilize that staff in a way that makes us more efficient and more effective. So we took a look at where our bureaus were, and one of the things that we noticed immediately was our Special Prosecutions Bureau had all of our experience and our talent isolated in this one bureau. And so, like, and there was no common thread. So you would have financial crime, cyber crime, public corruption, narcotics, the homicide ASAs who would specialize in more complex homicides. They were all in one bureau. And when they had to go try cases, they would take somebody else from special pros and try the cases in the courtroom. So what we wanted to do is break apart that that siloing effect of where our experience was residing. So we took our homicide unit and we put them in the trial court now. And now they're divided up into courtrooms so that every time a serious case comes in, they're trying a case with the assistants in the courtroom. So they're teaching them how to work up a case, how to get evidence in, how to do things that a more experienced attorney knows how to do that the trial court ASAs might not have gotten that institutional knowledge yet. So we put them there. And then we decided that there was no common thread of victims. So we took another bureau and we created the Special Victims Bureau. And that's a vertical prosecution model. And it has domestic violence, sexual assault, human trafficking, crimes against children, internet crimes against children, all of those types of cases where we have a traumatized victim. So we're having specialized training for that bureau of how do you approach a traumatized victim? How do you get them through the trial experience without re-traumatizing them, with making this an experience that is not horrific for them? It's always going to be horrific, but can we minimize that trauma for them? And so we are recruiting directly into that bureau for people who want to be that person who can hold a victim's hand through the entire process, who can get them through this in a way that's better for them. So it's a victim-centric model. Then we created a multi-jurisdiction bureau. And the multi-jurisdiction bureau is an acknowledgement that crime has changed. It no longer stays confined to the city border or the county border. So in that bureau, we've put all the crimes that could potentially cross city, county, state lines, all the crimes that we're going to be tapping into our federal partners for. So the gun trafficking, narcotics trafficking, human trafficking are all going in there. Financial crime, cyber crime, public corruption are all in the multi-jurisdiction task force. So I'll give you an example of why this is so necessary. Financial crimes or cyber crimes, the U.S. attorneys won't touch if it's $300,000 or less in the value. Well, I have an elderly mother and she must get a scam almost every day. They are targeting and they're very sophisticated in what they do. And if you are getting targeted, $300,000 could be someone's retirement savings. That's a huge population that hasn't been served, and we need to fill that void. One of the other things we need to do is public corruption. So the state's attorney's office always had a public corruption unit, but we never went after the big fish. You know, the big fish were always the U.S. attorneys. We would get the little fish, the building inspectors shaking people down. And the public corruption unit really was somewhat disbanded. And so right now, I think we can all be realistic and acknowledge that there is not going to be an appetite for the U.S. attorneys to be going after public corruption cases. We need to be ready to fill that void, and we are. So as people come in, if they have experience with doing public corruption cases at the U.S. attorney's office, we have a place for them. We have a place that we are going to be going full out in making sure that we meet that need.
I want to ask about one other thing, because I know in the past we've talked about even some training is one of the parts of this, working better with the Chicago Police Department or any other police departments, so that the cases are tighter. So one, is that going forward? And also, have you met with Police Superintendent Snelling?
Yes, it was one of my first meetings, and my mother has a big, huge crush on him. So I have to tell her. So we have a weekly meeting with my entire executive team and his command staff. So we are very much, you know, I keep using as an example, Law and Order, you know, bum, 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 when they first start. And there's two sides to the justice system, law enforcement and the prosecution. We need to work together. So we have started trainings together. We have started doing things like, what do we need in order to get felony approval for certain types of cases? And we're going out to the police districts and we're training with them. And we're developing new things that we can train with them. But every single week we are meeting with them to address like, okay, what are we seeing? What trends are we seeing? Where can we, you know, work together on things? And that has been a tremendous, tremendous working relationship.
Well, that's good to hear. We only have about a minute or so left. What has surprised you since you took office? Is there anything?
Well, I'll tell you my serious thing, and then I'll tell you my not so serious thing. My serious thing is what surprised me is the amount of absolute dedication of ASAs that we found when we came in. You know, nobody likes change, especially when we're talking about seismic change in institutions that have been the state's attorney's office. But I have to tell you, they have all risen to the occasion and said, we're here to do the work. And that's been so gratifying, Craig. It really has to be surrounded by that energy of people who really believe in the mission of what we're doing. But my not so serious surprise was I have a security detail, and I was like, I'm not that important. I don't need a security detail. Let's stop. You know, we don't need to do that. And so the first couple of days I was in office, we had like I did this biscuits with the boss where we went to every single courthouse and met the personnel and talked to them about what, you know, they should expect. And we had about an hour and a half lag time between. So I said to my security detail, I'm like, you know, let's just stop in Oak Brook Mall. I got to stop and just drop me off and I'll meet you right back here. And they were like, no, ma'am, that's not how this works. So I had to go to Sephora with a 65-year-old ex-Marine walking up and down the aisles of Sephora with me. I've never been so mortified in my entire life. But I will tell you this, that now that I've gotten used to it, I start my day and I end my day with the most positive energy people in the entire world who are my security detail. And I am so grateful to them.
Well, thank you for that. And now I've just got this picture in my mind of you shopping. But anyway, and I do want to thank Cook County State's Attorney Eileen O'Neill Burke for spending this time with us. And to our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That's WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on the homepage. You can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
One night, one goal. Stop suicide. Register today for AFSP's 30th overnight walk in New York City, June 21st, as we walk 16 miles from dusk till dawn to stop suicide. Start your journey today at theovernight.org.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Almacid, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Almacid has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Almacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almacid.com. That's A-L-M-A-S-E-D.com.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new unrivaled league, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.